Welcome to another episode of Living an Alter Life. My name is Mike, and today we are joined by one of the SWAMI 2025 finishers, Mr. Garrett Knutson, who absolutely rocked the race this year. Garrett, you ready to go for a little run?
Absolutely.
All right, you all recovered?
Left ankle is slowing me down still, but
Yeah, you know, I think everybody's left ankle is messed up. I talked to Katie, and she's got shin splints, and mainly on the left side. And people who have run SWAMI know why, but you know, why do you think it's the left side, Garrett?
I mean, if everyone's to be believed, we're gonna go with the uneven surfaces.
There you go. That camber downhill for 180 miles.
Yeah, just running on the side of the road and or the beach.
It was a wild time. Did you have a good time?
Oh yeah, I had a great time. I mean, the last 36 hours were a little painful, but all in all, it was cool.
Awesome. Well, we're going to get into that in a second. Let's start out with, who is Garrett Knutson? What do you do? Where are you from? Where do you live now? And all that good stuff, family, that stuff.
Yeah, well, from Virginia Beach, moved down to Knott's Island, so not far out from Virginia Beach, 12, 13 years ago. And I work for my father. We run a roll-off dumpster company. So I drive a big old dump truck looking thing, and we rent dumpsters out to people.
That is cool. Now, I've always heard of Knott's Island. So if I am going from Virginia Beach, is it south or is it north?
It's south. Like it's just basically south of Pungo, you know?
So I go to Pungo, and you have to take the ferry to it, right?
One way off the island is through the ferry. The other way is you just go down Princess Anne Road through Pungo, and if you just keep driving, you'll wind up in Knott's Island.
Pretty cool. Okay. I did not realize you could go all the way down through Pungo and get to Knott's Island.
Yeah, you sure can. It's cool down there. I like it down there. It's real quiet.
That is awesome. Are there a lot of places to run down there?
We have the Mackay Island National Wildlife Refuge. And it's a nice little gravel running path. And in the summer, it opens up and you can do a good, 5 or 10 mile loop out there. A lot of it's on the water. Plenty of snakes to keep you busy and occupied looking for them. So, yeah, it's fun.
Cool. All right. So drive a big dump truck looking thing with the roll off, the big dumpsters, right, that they use for construction and all that stuff?
Absolutely.
Wow. That sounds like a lot of hard work.
It's actually not too bad. You know, I grew up with all types of jobs, but also my father runs a landscaping company. So I've cut grass my entire life, and driving a trash truck is a lot easier than weed whacking lawns all day. So I'll take
it. Yeah, especially in August when it's 100 degrees with 110% humidity.
Absolutely.
There you go. That is wild. That is awesome. So are you married, Garrett?
Yes. Married to a wonderful woman named Mary.
Awesome. Any kids?
No kids. We got two cats and two dogs, and they keep us busy enough.
Cool. All right. So have you always been a runner, or is this something different?
It's new to me. I was not big on team sports growing up or anything like that. I just picked up running from backpacking and hiking, which, you know, I never thought I'd say I'm a hiker. But a couple of years ago, when the pandemic was winding down, I got into backpacking big time. And that's cool. What got me into running.
That is so. You come from a backpacking, hiking background. Wow, that served you well during SWAMIs, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, SWAMI really hit the nail on the head for me. Yeah,
that is awesome. So, what are some of the places that you've backpacked and hiked?
Well, my wife and my friend Chris, we're slowly doing the Virginia section of the AT. So we started at the Tennessee border. And we're working our way up. We've taken probably a year off, but we got, 130 miles of that under our belt. So maybe, 300 something left to go to get through Virginia. And then, West Virginia's been great. Dolly Sods. We've been out to Colorado. We backpacked on Catalina Island. There's a cool trail out there. So it's been fun learning that. It's really fun.
That's awesome. I love the Appalachian Trail. So we moved back here from Wyoming during the pandemic. And, I started running trails in Wyoming, and I was like, well, the Appalachian Trail, there's so many people that are on it. It's got to be like this, paved road almost and everything. until I went on it the first time and realized, oh my God, this is highly technical. And
Absolutely.
so,
Like,
yeah,
even in the
so.
summertime, you can go out there and not see anybody all day.
I
So,
know, isn't it
love it.
crazy? So, backpacking, hiking, how did you hear about Swami Shuffle 200?
Once I started running, somebody whispered ultra sign up in my ear, and plugging away on there, looking at all the races, I stumbled onto it through ultra sign up.
Okay. So now, how have you done very many races?
Oh goodness, no. So I just started running. Geez, I guess it's 25 now. So 2024, I decided to start running because the backpacking trips were getting to be too much, just going out of town almost every other weekend or even once a month, somebody to watch the dog, somebody to feed the cats. So running kind of kept me busy all year last year, and I backed off the backpacking, and I pitched it to my coach. It's like, hey, I know you want to do a 200 miler in the middle of winter to, keep your legs up. And he's like, nope, that's cool.
That's funny.
So then I jumped on the wait list. Yeah.
That is fun. So now, who's your coach?
Jeff Garmeyer.
Oh, cool. Okay. Free outside.
Yeah, you know
There
him.
you go. Yeah, I ran across the years last year. Well,
Oh.
this last 2024, 25, and he was out there. I think he was just pacing somebody,
Okay.
in his usual Crocs, and just wild get up that you're sitting there going, wow, you are the weirdest guy. I love the guy. He's
Yeah,
just the
I think that's.
weirdest. It's awesome. It's
Yeah,
fun.
his weird attracted me. I said, I think we could work together just fine.
Yeah. So that's cool. So you told Jeff about it. And so what did Jeff think about you signing up?
He was pretty supportive. Like I said, I haven't run many races, so I did gloss over. I did an overnight distance challenge in West Virginia over the summer, and a 5K and a half marathon. So that's literally all
That
the
is
racing
awesome.
I've done.
That is awesome.
But he was pretty encouraging, and the year was going good, and we just went for it, and it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, and you did fantastic. So you started out, Swami. Did you have a strategy? I know you was your wife, your main crew, and then you had a bunch of pacers, or who was your crew?
So my wife and her sister were crew on day one, and she was going to be my main crew, but because we did lose a family member earlier in the year, she wasn't able to take off as much work. And I only had about 2 weeks of notice before I had to run. So,
Oh, wow. So you didn't get unwaitlisted until 2 weeks before the race?
exactly 2 weeks before the race, yeah.
Wow. A
So yeah, it was
lot of time to prepare, huh?
week one. I was terrified, honestly. But I just got right into the planning phase of it. And my plan was to get a different crew person to drive down each day, and while they were there, that was my time to move fast, go as fast as I absolutely could for the day. And then when they would leave, I would put my overnight pack on. Also, good to mention, we went down to the course a week before the race, and our waitress was kind enough to let me store a Rubbermaid with all my race nutrition and all my little extra shoes and stuff like that down below her house in her carport. So every day,
Oh, that's
crew person.
awesome.
Yeah, the crew person comes in, they get the Rubbermaid or whatever I need out of it. They find me on course. I take my big 25-liter pack off, and then from there we were cooking.
That's a brilliant strategy. Yeah, because I remember meeting you out on the course one time, and you were coming back from the lighthouse. And you were talking about that you had a new crew person coming down, I think, because it was early in the morning. I want to say it was like Tuesday morning.
Okay, yeah. I think my buddy Chris was crewing me that day. He's a wild card. He's a wild man. But yeah, it was great seeing you out there. I was like, yeah, I'll take a banana, I'll take a donut, whatever you got. Those overnights alone were really cool to kind of reset, and I didn't give myself any pressure to move fast. I definitely wanted to move at night, but when the crew people were there, it was none of my friends, this is new to me, so it's absolutely new to them. So when they were there,
Right.
little more responsibility, to do this, do that, and that's not always my thing. So yeah, it was something.
That's awesome. So now, the first day you were out, I mean, you were kind of in the front of the pack the whole first day, weren't you?
I think so. not like nipping at the leader's heels or anything like that. But day one, and this wasn't anything my coach told me. I just said, here's what I'm going to do. And he said, go for it. So day one, my plan was to do 2 miles on, 2 miles off, with the stipulation that my 2 miles of on time, my 2 miles running, if anything whatsoever came up, any small pain, I could do a walk run in those 2 miles. So
okay.
As the day went on, I would do a little more walk run for those 2 miles. But the two on, two off got me well over, say, 4.5 miles an hour for day okay. one.
Oh, that's awesome. So how many miles did you end up doing, like, from the 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. portion of that first day?
By the time the crew left, which was, 7 p.m. or so, I want to say we covered almost 45, 46 miles, awesome. Something like okay. that.
So you were past the BP station heading down North Carolina 12.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was okay. on that neighborhood road close okay. to the beach.
Yep. That's awesome. So now, did you go the whole night that night, or did you stop and sleep someplace?
No, I definitely wanted to get some sleep in day one. So I planned on 4 hours, and that's about what I got. And it was kind of funny. I was starting to, you know, feel that fatigue, getting tired, and it was completely residential. I needed just a place to lay down, and I saw something that said, you know, life is good. And I said, that's got to be a church. I'm going to go lay in that grass between the church and whatever's next to it. It's basically a dumpster and a fence. And then I just realized I'm in between two retail locations. But it was a narrow little spot, patch of grass, so I didn't get sandy. And that's okay. where I did night one.
Wow, that's cool. Did you have a bivy pack, or what did you sleep in?
Yeah, I had a bivy sack with my 40-degree, like my summer quilt, which cool. I realized was a bit overkill. But that was my setup. I just, you know, took my shoes off. I went straight in there, and I could be laying down in 5 minutes. It was great.
That's awesome. Cool. So first night, you got about 4 hours sleep. So did you get up like early in the morning and start up again, or what?
Yeah, so I want to say I went to bed around like 11 or so. So that would have put me up around 3, 4. So went to bed 11, 12, something like that. And then I would just basically hike it out. And I could do some running with my pack on. So actually, that was a small thing. If I was feeling good before my crew would show up, I would do a little bit of running with the pack, not much, just right. to, you know, get the legs going so that when I put my race vest on, when the crew showed up, it would feel much lighter, you know.
Okay.
So yeah,
that was a great strategy. So what time did you get onto Pea Island? Like, what time did you hit Bass Knight Bridge?
Oh, geez. I couldn't tell you the time exactly, but, you know, I was leaving Nag's Head pretty early. So I think I fell asleep at the edge of Kitty Hawk and Nag's Head.
Yep. Yep.
And my crew came in at Nag's Head. So that would have been what, say 12 miles before the yep. bridge, something like that. Yep. So it was the morning. I missed sunrise, you know, okay. so it was a few hours after sunrise.
Cool. That is awesome. So then did you make it all the way down to the lighthouse on Monday, or?
Yes.
Okay.
My only time goal I gave myself for the race was, let's try to do half of this thing. Let's hit the lighthouse by midnight on Monday night, I guess it would have been.
Yeah. Yep.
And I made it there around 11 p.m. So I was smitten with that. And then, like I said, I just found a patch of trees right there near the lighthouse and laid down for about 3 hours, 3.5 hours, maybe 20 feet off the road near the lighthouse.
Okay. That is awesome. And then your crew must have met up with you like in Avon the next morning.
Yeah, I just headed south, and I gave everybody my location, and, you know, call me when you're getting close after you get the Rubbermaid type stuff. And, you know, I was like, when you see me, pull over, give me the vest, and then go to the next parking lot, you know, and I'll just from there.
That is awesome. What a great strategy. That's cool. Because I met you between Avon and Salvo. Yeah. I pulled off on the side of the road, and I think actually Kyle and I met you Sunday night when you were still heading down, because you had your big pack on,
yep.
and we gave you a banana. That's right. And then I brought you donuts the next morning. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Cool. That is awesome. So then did you just keep up this strategy all the way through hitting the beach? And when did you hit the beach exactly?
Now we're talking the last 25 miles.
Yeah.
All right. So I tried to keep up the strategy. But obviously, as time went on, the running really reduced. So by day three, I was doing a little bit of running in the morning. We're talking, you know, I passed someone going opposite direction. I said, "Wow, you're still running. You're doing great." And she said, "Yeah, I'm just going light pole to light pole, because when you're down there, there's nothing but sand dunes and light poles." So I said, "That is great." So I was able to keep jogging through miles, say 130 something. But after that, I did not run again until I saw that finish line. So I made it to the last 25 miles. I guess it would have been, I can't remember the days, Mike.
I think it had to have been sometime on Tuesday, because you finished Wednesday.
No, I think I finished Thursday. No?
Did you finish Thursday? Hold on.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I know. Now I'm like, what day did Garrett finish?
Wednesday. I finished Thursday morning. So
okay.
I made it to the beach Wednesday night at 10 p.m. And what was funny about that, I was in such a rough spot. My little sister was helping me. She was my last crew person. And I said, "Cool, we're 10 miles from the 4x4 access. I'm going to be there in 3 hours. I'll be there at 7 p.m. I did not get there until 10 p.m. I was moving. Wow. I was doing like 25-minute miles, and my feet were killing me. But every day before the crew would leave, I said, "Go up course, stash me a gallon of water near a trash can somewhere, shoot me a pin, let me know where it is." And once I got my gallon of water, it was 10 p.m. By 11, I was asleep. So I found the sand. Wow. I found the sand dune. I slept for 2 hours, and that's when I started chugging down the beach.
Okay. Wow. So you started down the beach about 1 a.m. on Thursday.
Yes. And I was moving pretty good at first. I also raw dogged this thing. I did not bring any headphones. I didn't want any music. I just wanted to be in the moment. And I was using my alarm clock every time I fell asleep. But I did about 10 miles after I got up around 1. And I said, "I'm going to do a 20-minute nap. I don't need my alarm." And of course, that became 2 hours.
So oh, my gosh.
Yeah. When I got up from that, I was angry. My wife called me. I was like, "Okay, I don't know when I'm going to be at the finish, but I slept for 2 hours and now the sand sucks and the tide's coming up," and I was grumpy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's a little bit to be expected, you know, in a 200 and almost 20 mile race. So, you know, you're forgiven, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I must have been doing some zigzagging, because my watch clocked me at 228 miles.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah. Well, you know, the year before when I finished at 226.5. So
Okay, good.
So you're not that far off.
Not alone.
Everybody's different. Like I tell people, like they should just say it's 222 miles, because I think that's like the accurate thing is 222 miles.
Mm-hmm. And I want to be humble and say, yes, I did a 200, but then I can't be humble. So I'm like, I ran over 220, you know?
That's right. Well, that, you know, that's forever etched in your brain now that, you know, you've gone over 200 miles. So what can't you do?
Oof. Yeah, we're going to figure out. I don't know.
That is awesome. So now, have you fallen in love with this 200 mile distance? Do you have some future plans?
You know, I think I want to do some 50s this year.
Okay.
I want to think that that's really short, and I'd like to just get closer to being able to run every step of those 50 miles. And I'm not there. You know, I love a 9-minute pace, but it's not sustainable for that long. So I got to learn to just run at 10 or 11 and just set it on low and slow and forget about it. But I don't have anything really set in stone. I signed up with a race company in West Virginia that does this Moonlight on the Falls Distance Challenge. So I'm going to do 3 races with them. I think one is just a trail run. One is the overnight distance challenge. And I want to improve my time from last year on that. And then I'm looking at maybe signing up for the JFK 50.
Cool.
Yeah.
You'd love that one. JFK 50 is like, it's an awesome race.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Now I will say, okay, so the Appalachian Trail part of that thing, the very end of it is brutal. I mean, it is. Yeah. I mean, when they say Weaverton Cliffs, it is a cliff. So when you're coming down this thing, there's a little bit of rock climbing. There's a little bit of, oh, my God, how do I get down this? There's, you know, it, but it's so worth it. And then you hit the CNO trail.
Yeah, you know, I've heard, you know, everybody say you have basically a marathon on a gravel path, and it's so boring, it's so boring. And for me, if I'm running and it's a nice straight road, or you know, whatever, it doesn't have to be straight, but you know, if I'm running, it's not very boring. But like on the Swami, you've got, I don't know, 100 miles, give or take, on Highway 12.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
when I there and I was running fast, quote unquote fast, not boring, because you're running, you say, how's my form, am I doing this, am I doing that, your
Yep.
mind is very, very occupied. But when I was walking that 50 odd miles back on the highway, that's when the drudgery set in.
Yeah.
So I'm not too worried about the CNO gravel path. I'm like, if I
Oh,
could
and you know, the other thing that's cool about the CNO, there's so much history. I mean, it is, there's so much history. So you go by this lock and you realize, oh my gosh, that was like built in 1770, you know, and you're just like, how is that still standing? It's so cool, just the amount of history. And you know, you go by these markers and it's like some battlefield, you know, during the Revolutionary War, and you're going, wow. So it's actually really fun. And you know, when and I'm not a fast runner, I'm a slow runner, so it doesn't matter anyway, because I'm just going to be moving at, you know, my turtle pace.
We're
So
all turkey. That's to be
yeah,
expected.
so it's fun. But it's fun because then you see all these things and you're like, oh cool. And then you can kind of and then you your mind just kind of sort of goes that, you know, it's that whole being in the moment, not worry about how many more miles you've got, just you know, be in the mile you're in. And
Yeah.
yeah, cool. So running, I'm still tripping out that like you're so new to running that like you've done an overnight a 5K and a half marathon before you did Swami. That's even more impressive, Garrett.
Oh man, I'm really good at tearing myself down. So I'm going to try not to do that and just say that the backpacking experience, and when I say that, I got really sucked into backpacking. At first, I just wanted to find cool campsites, but I found out very quickly, in my mind, any backcountry campsite is so much cooler than a front country KOA or whatever. So year one, I spent 40 nights outside, and I'm just a weekend
Wow.
warrior. So I just wanted to be comfortable sleeping outside. So year one, I was already learning the art of the kind of short nap, stealth camp, under the radar type stuff. And then year two of the backpacking, I started to get into the distance and whatnot. And that's when I realized that I liked the challenge of it all. When everybody was huffing and puffing and complaining, I was kind of like saying, this is the funnest part. And I didn't see that coming. That caught me by surprise. So with the running thing, and this is fresh in my mind because I started to write something on my phone today, but the running thing started because I was going to Colorado. I had some family out there, and they were going to give us a car we could borrow, and we're going to do a 14er. So I figured, you know, I'm not going to have any air. So in the neighborhood, there's a nice 5 mile loop. I'm going to go run this loop. And I haven't run since maybe my early 20s. And I was able to run, you know, 95% of this loop. I started walking maybe once I could see my truck in the distance. And
Okay.
I'd never run 5 miles before, but this is after backpacking a couple of years. And I said, holy moly, you know, hiking, walking got me to the point where I could run 5 miles. I've never done that. And then, you know, light bulb strikes and you're like, well, what is running going to do for my hiking? It's another reason Swami Shuffle for me fit really well, because it's a really good barometer. Because I also hiked the southern part of the Swami Shuffle a couple of years ago before I knew the Swami Shuffle existed. I went from Sandbridge to, I just say, the Oregon Inlet Bridge. I don't, the Bassnet Bridge.
Okay.
So,
Okay.
and that took me like 3 nights. I love to travel at night. So I did it in 3 nights and 2 days. And at the time, I thought that was a really aggressive itinerary. It took me 60 hours to do 70 miles.
Right.
And so I was watching my watch. And during the Swami, hour 60, I'd done about 150 miles. So I'm
Oh
like,
my
okay,
gosh.
the running's working, you know?
That's awesome. What a comparison that you have that data set to look at is awesome.
Like I said, and I'm not an organized guy, but the backpacking really changed stuff for me. It rearranged my brain. I wrote down, you know, where I camped and the distance, and I logged all that stuff. And that's not, like I said, I don't do that in day-to-day life typically, but backpacking screwed me up, man.
That's all. It screwed you up for good. So, I mean, what's kind of your mindset when you're doing these, you know, long backpacking trips? And then I'm sure that carried through to Swami, but what's been like your mindset?
Well, you know, every trip is different. So typically I'm going to be with a friend or my wife, and we're going to have everything laid out as far as here's what we want to do. And, you know, the Far Out app, if you're going to the AT, is absolutely crucial or yeah. Really easy. You know, you can just say, all right, there's going to be a campsite in 15 miles. And when I do a lot of that stuff, just have the plan and execute. But you have to understand something's going to come up. It's going to take longer than you think, yada, yada, yada. But I just like to have fun with it. So when I was talking with Jeff about the Swami, I just said, like, if I can smile when the times get hard, I think I'll be okay. So if I just keep that positive outlook, I was never confident that I would finish that darn race, by the way. But I figured if I could keep smiling, I would be in the right direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. So and now, have you seen the backpacking and the running that's definitely helping the backpacking? Have you seen that translate into a difference in your everyday life?
I would say so. Just in like the, you know, it's kind of like all about comfort and comfort zones. And when you practice this type of stuff, you're much more well-versed in being just a little outside of your comfort zone and saying, this is totally fine. So I don't like small complaints anymore, you know, and I try not to complain about piddly stuff. You know, you just say, I'm going to go home later tonight. So what is this work problem really going to affect me, right? So traffic, that's water, you know, bouncing off a rock. You know, I don't really care about little stuff anymore. And it's just really helped my outlook. You know, I've always been a positive guy, but it's helped me be more chill.
Cool. No, that's awesome. That's a great description. Cause you know, you hear a lot about being able to overcome and adapt, you know, everyday problems, because I mean, that's what you do in a long trip.
Yeah. And then to the comfort thing, you got to be comfortable when it's slightly uncomfortable, but then you can have so many little teeny weeny things that can bring you comfort, or maybe it's even peace of mind that I call comfort, you know? So, you know, as long as you got X, Y, and Z, and you've got the confidence that you're going to, you know, walk all night or be able to sleep in some shrubs or something, you can do it. You know, it's all really attainable stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So dream race, like if you could, like if somebody came up with, okay, we're going to pay for your race, we're going to pay for your travel to it, what's your dream race?
Well, I mean, it's hard, you know, I just got into the live streaming. So all week last year, I watched the Coca Dona, and I did not know anything like this existed. You know, it was very new to me, the ultra running thing. And I'm like, holy moly, that's so cool. They're going through like most of the state. And, you know, that would be amazing. I'd have to just say Coca Dona, and I don't want to go with the softball. And then the Candace Burt races look really cool, too. What's that Moab Bigfoot out in Washington? Seems awesome. Now, I haven't done much research on the specifics of those courses, but I do like the appeal of the longer distance equals low and slow pace, which right now, where I'm at in my fitness, as long as my feet and my knees hold up, it seems more attainable to me than, say, a 100-mile race with a 26-hour cutoff or something kind
of aggressive. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, 24 hours are cool because you know that in 24 hours you're done. Yeah, so whatever miles you get in 24 hours, that's what you get.
Yes. So I need to try some stuff like that. And I know there's some local distance challenges that are around that I should be more willing to sign up to. But, you know, I don't know. My thing is I'm at work. I'm using my phone to go through my job. And I don't have a computer at home or anything like that. So when I get home, I just want to put the phone down. So half of my research is done. I'm like at a red light. I'm like, okay, 200 mile.
You know, that's awesome.
Red light. But when I get home, I'm burnt out. Show me a big screen. Let's watch TV or something. I don't want to play on my phone.
There you go. I totally get that. All right. So we're going to start winding this thing down. This is what we ask everybody on the Living an Ultra Life podcast. So you hear living an ultra life. What's the first thing that pops into your head?
You know, I was speaking with another competitor out there on the course with the Swami, Jeremy, and I'm going to just boil it down to running. It took me 6 months of running to say, yeah, I'm a runner. So it's going to take me a little while till I can say, yeah, I'm an ultra runner. But for me, what it boils down to is being able to make the decision to go further. You want to go out there and you want to run a mile, or you want to go in the woods and you want to hike X amount or whatever it is. It's really nice to say, you know what, I'm feeling good and I'm going to go further. I'm going to be out here a little longer. So that's what it means to me. Just being comfortable going further.
Awesome. That is a perfect answer, Garrett. And it's such a pleasure to meet you. You were an absolute delight. Every time I saw you, brilliant smile on your face, encouraging to everybody you met. Yeah, you really had it dialed in. I was really, really intrigued by your strategies because you were just so dialed in, and your crew just did a phenomenal job. So.
Well, I truly appreciate you saying that, and being so new, I have to acknowledge how much the stars aligned. I got very lucky just to finish the race. You know, I planned on finishing like Friday or something, like Friday evening. I know I'd be out there, I'd be in the pain cave and everything was hurting. And then I'd say, it's just my feet. And I bet there's other people out here whose knees are going and their hips hurt and they're chafing. And so I just had to thank my lucky stars and say, it's just my feet, put another layer of tape on it, and let's get it done. So everything lined up for me to finish that race, and I just couldn't be more grateful.
Did a great job, Garrett. Proud of you, man.
Yeah, great to meet you, Mike. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Really appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time on Living an Ultra Life.